It's time for Wise Money with Corhorn Financial Group with financial advisors Kevin Corhorn, Mike Bernard, and Josh Gregory.
Welcome to another episode of the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group, where every week we're helping you take your next wise step in your financial life. Thanks for being here, friends. My name is Mike Bernard. I am your host. I'm also one of the certified financial planners on the program. With me in the KFG studios, Kevin Corhorn and Josh Gregory.
Hey, tax planning is one of the six areas of your financial life that you need to be considering as you make your financial decisions. And it can be really expensive if you aren't proactive and you're not structuring your wealth to pay less taxes, not only over your lifetime, but over your kids' lifetime as well. And so today we're going to be hitting the tax strategies that you need to be aware of, especially in the year of retirement.
That's right. That's right. And it's tax season right now. So if you don't have a jump on your tax preparation, which is different than tax planning, then time to get going. If you have a small business, S-Corp, that sort of thing, your tax filing deadline is coming up here in a couple of weeks. So you might want to extend that. If you're not ready to file your personal, extend that business return, get them both filed at the same time before April 15. Work with your CFP. Be doing tax planning. All right. If you have a question for the program, we'd love to hear from you. If you need some help, we're here as well. Call or text us 574-222-2000. That's 574-222-2000. Online, wisemoneyshow.com is where you can find us. Then all of our social media as well. Search the Wise Money Show. Kevin.
Mike.
What are the six areas of financial planning?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. This is a show about financial planning. We love financial planning. We didn't come up with these areas, but we work with these areas, within these areas every day. And you really want, if you're listening to this show, you want your financial life to be integrated. So the first area is present financial position, where you're looking at your income statement or budget, what have you, and your net worth.
How much of your income actually gets added to your net worth? I mean, at a simple form, and most times we don't think about that, but how much of your income can you capture and keep on your net worth and add to your net worth?
And answer the question, what do I have to show for it? Yeah. Right? I've been working all this time. I've made this money. What has filtered down and is now in the form of some sort of stored energy, whether it's property or invest other types of investments or cash.
All right, I derailed you.
Yes, you did. Yep, keep going. Okay, so the next is protection planning. Now, if you said overall, what's my financial planner's responsibility? It is risk management. But this particular area is protection planning. So with protection planning, it's all about risk management. What risks do I live with? What risks do I transfer? So if I have a meaningful risk and I can write a check to an insurance company, and now the insurance company's on risk for that and I'm no longer on risk for that, that's one of the ways to transfer risk. It's not the only way, but that typically when people think of protection planning, they think of, well, my life insurance, disability insurance, home and auto insurance, things like that. The next area is tax planning. Now, that's the biggie, Mike. That's kind of what we're talking about today. And when you say tax planning, when I talk to folks for the first time in the door at Corhorn Financial Group, and I say, who helps you with your tax planning? They start and then they hesitate. And then they say, well, this person prepares my taxes. And I say, great. What kind of tax planning, what kind of thought leadership in the area of taxes are you getting? And they say, well, you know, I'm not. And so we are firm believers that not only does everyone need financial planning, but especially tax planning. That's the big area.
Because it affects every other area as well, right? It creates opportunities. It creates maybe some dangers, some potential mistakes, because you're making decisions in other areas of your financial life and not pausing to recognize, oh, there's tax consequences to this. Sometimes people figure that out the hard way.
Right. And tax planning is really about playing chess instead of playing checkers. So when you're talking about these opportunities, Josh, you're talking about, hey, what should I how should I structure things today that's going to benefit me 15 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
So that's important. The next area is investment planning. And a lot of times when people say, well, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm a financial planner. They think, oh, well, you just sell investments. And that is not the case at all. We operate within the six areas of financial planning. If your the person that you're working with just sells investments and you ask for tax advice and they say, well, you should consult your tax advisor, you're probably working with the wrong person. You want someone that can look at all of the different there's the investment structures that you can have, and then the asset types, and there's a bunch of different things that need to be considered, and it all needs to be filtered through the other pieces and other areas of your financial life. The next area is retirement planning. I would say more so think along the lines of financial independence. When is work optional and retirement affordable? And do I have I stress tested my plan? Have I run it through a Monte Carlo simulation to say, what's the probability of success of my plan? And as much as I've tried to forget my statistics class from college, you want to kind of tune back in and say, where should I be as far as a probability of success? And the question that I ask when folks come in is, hey, what's your sense? Are you ahead? Are you behind? Are you right on pace? And you want to know where you are for your plan. And I would say I've never met any two couples that have the exact same plan. So your plan is specific to you. So when you hear, well, you should have this percentage of your income in retirement to replace your current income, that's you're a one or a zero, right? It's you're not a 80% type person. So then the last area and the cap of any good financial plan is estate planning. And so what does that mean? It means that and typically if you have two lives, if you have a couple, the estate plan is really for the second death, but you want to plan as if that second death happens tomorrow and say, hey, in the event that it did, it's possible, it's not probable. So in the event that tomorrow you're both gone, what's going to happen with your resources? And so that is, and you do that via legal documents, asset ownership, beneficiary designations. There's a number of different components to how your estate plan is composed and put together to fit your situation.
I like how you talked about the individual nature, the customized plan that needs to be in place for every single family. And it's not a static tool or a static written document or anything either. This is something that is changing constantly. And you think about all those areas that Kevin was just refreshing us on, all of them, or many of them at least, can change when you get to retirement. And that's really what financial planning is all about. It's preparing you for the decision points that you're going to encounter in life. And those can be especially high stakes decisions when you get to these change moments in your life, these transition points where you're going from a game that you had been excelling at to now you're entering into a new stage of life. The game is different. The decisions are different. And that certainly it certainly impacts the tax planning that you're going to do in this new stage of life.
Anytime you're making a big financial decision, you've got to look at all six of those areas. You just have to. If you're not considering them, it's likely you're making a mistake. You've got to look at all six areas when you're making a big decision and make decisions that bring synergy or benefits to as many areas as possible. I can't think of a bigger financial decision than retirement or financial independence, whatever you want to call it. For some people, it's very conventional, old way of thinking. Others, no, they don't even want you to say retirement. It's just a new stage of life. But at that time, what are the big tax planning strategies that kind of bring synergy to your overall financial life? Guys, let's turn it there and talk through the year you retire or the year you're, right before you retire or right after you retire. What are the big tax planning strategies you need to consider?
I think it's important that if you're going into this new stage of life, stop and pause, consider what is going to be changing, what kind of opportunities are going to be going away. Mm-hmm. Your ability to fund certain types of accounts or to utilize certain tax shelters, think that retirement account at work, your 401k, maybe a Roth IRA, a health savings account. Is this the last year that you're going to get to fund that? All of those are these tools that have been fantastic ways for you to really be intentional with when are you going to pay taxes? Am I going to pay now or am I going to pay in the future? Those tools and your ability to contribute, they go away often when your paycheck stops.
Yeah. I mean, some of the, you lumped them all together. I think I would personally want to break those up because they definitely could stop. Some of them could continue. We'll see. But funding those tax shelters or being aware of what is your tax shelter strategy in the year you retire, leading up to retirement, but then into retirement as well, I would start there. So funding that 401k, Roth IRAs, HSAs, we're going to pick that back up. Got more coming up on the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group.
This is Wise Money with Corhorn Financial Group.
In the year you retire, or right around the time you retire, what are the big tax strategies? The first one, bar none, it catches a lot of people by surprise when we share it, and we're going to unpack that right now. This is the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group. Thanks for being here. My name is Mike Bernard. With me in the KF2 studios, Kevin Corhorn and Josh Gregory. Stay up to date on all Wise Money content. Find us online, wisemoneyshow.com. All right, the year you retire, it's different because likely you're going to have a partial year of income, right? Even if you retire right at the end of the year, New Year's Eve, you're done. Your last paycheck's probably going to fall the next year. You might have a little vacation pay that falls the next year. There might be a little bit of income. And so, but I don't know, guys, our experience, most people don't retire New Year's Eve. They retire their birthday or the month of their birthday or on a new season or right before a vacation or right after a project's done. So likely what that means is the year you retire, you're going to have a partial year of income. Likely. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what that means is consider funding as one of the top tax strategies. I know it might be plain vanilla, but it does catch a lot of people by surprise. Maximizing your tax shelters that require earned income. I mean, Josh lumped them all together, but there, each of them, there's different rules. Your 401k, you can only fund through your paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even, well, I retired in June. By the time I file my taxes, oh, I could have put more in my 401k. Let's do that now. No, it's got to come out of your paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've just been doing 10% a year and your salary is such at a level that throughout the year, you're going to max it out at 10%, you're fine, or 15%, you're fine. But if you only work until April, you're going to want to goose up that contribution so you reach that max. It's the last time you'll be able to ever.
That's one of the reasons why it's so important to let your CFP into your plan here. Like, what's your timing for retirement going to be? Because if it is going to come early in the year, you may want to be proactive, as Mike is saying, and really ramp up the contributions that are happening out of each paycheck. If you're going to work half the year, you need to contribute twice as much in that half of year, twice the rate that you've been contributing in order to get to the max by the midpoint.
And so as we're talking about this, the other thing that you would want to understand, because I dealt with this last year, is if there's a deal out there, and so I'm going to work until June, and in June when I retire, I'm also going to get 1 year's worth of salary.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to get a certain type of income. And I was dealing with this with a client towards the end of last year, because as their company got bought out, one of the employees was getting a buyout, and he said, wait a minute, based on my income, I want to defer as much of this as I possibly can into my retirement plan. And to make a long story short, that buyout basically wasn't eligible to be have contributions into the retirement plan,
right,
made to it. So you say, well, what's the rule of thumb? The rule of thumb is work with your certified financial planner well in advance of any of this stuff, because it might be dependent on the type, the character, the nature of the income that you're receiving. It also might be dependent upon your plan document and what is stated in your plan and what is allowed for. So there's nothing, at the risk of sounding like an optimist, there's nothing simple about this.
So, you know, we kind of went on about the six areas of financial planning. And if you're a regular listener to the Wise Money Show, you might say, yep, I know that stuff. But here's the deal. When we share this news with someone, this planning strategy, no one likes it. Now, I maybe one out of 20 like it, because they're thinking retirement. I need to hold on to these dollars. you're actually telling me to take a lesser take-home pay? No. I'm going to buy the new car. We've got the vacation we need to fund. We're finally going to, enclose the porch and make it a sunroom. And I need dollars. And that's where, as boring as it sounds, this is a great idea, unless you're also talking about your present financial position and cash flow. It's a great idea, unless you are already talking about retirement and those, those big expenses coming up in this first year. You've got to look at all six areas of your financial life to see if this is a good idea and this is one you should implement. But you've got to consider it. That, because as soon as the paycheck goes away, your ability to contribute to a 401k goes away. What makes a 401k so special? Number one, there's a match. Number two, it's the biggest, for most of us, it's the biggest bucket that we can stuff dollars in a tax-sheltered way. Second to that is an IRA or Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. If you have earned too much throughout your career where you haven't been able to contribute to a Roth, or you haven't been able to deduct an IRA contribution or whatever because you make too much, it's possible the year that you retire with this partial income, you could do it. Mm-hmm. And I would absolutely consider that. We see a lot more people say, well, that's coming out of my pocket. I don't want to fund that Roth. I want to keep that cash in my coffers for retirement. And for most people, it's still available to you in your Roth. Just there's no risk. Just put it in there. And then if you don't need it, it's growing tax deferred. Or even if you do want it right back out the next year, the little bit of interest to turn has been tax free. Mm-hmm. So contributing to an IRA or Roth IRA specifically, you need earned income. And then the year you retire, it's the last year you have it.
That's right. And the other thing to keep in mind, if you are someone who your income is too high and you've never been able to contribute to a Roth IRA directly, maybe you've been using a backdoor Roth contribution all along. You throw the money into an IRA and then very quickly convert it over to a Roth, two-step process. That kind of goes away if you retire from your employer, roll that money into an IRA, and now that the strategy is kind of broken for you for the most part. And so, again, the timing of these types of things, you may be funding this, depending on when you're listening to this episode, there are stretches of the year where you could contribute for last year and this year. Just get them both done all in one chunk. Do that backdoor Roth IRA, and then you might be done at that point. And you wouldn't want to find out that, oh, I retired, I'm getting to the end of the year, I've always done a Roth contribution doing the backdoor Roth, and oh, shoot, I can't because I've got all this IRA money, and it just messes up the strategy for you if you get the timing wrong on this.
Yeah, it's tricky because you could have done the backdoor Roth IRA at the beginning of the year, and so it's good. It's what we always do. And, at the very end of the year, you roll your 401k into your IRA.
Yeah.
It just negated the goodness of what happened at the beginning of the year.
Now, speaking of goodness, in the year you retire, again, this theme is you got partial year worth of income, mm-hmm. funding your retirement. You might have the potential to get my favorite tax credit out there, and that is the retirement savers credit. This is a tax, so deductions are good, credits are great. And a credit is a dollar for dollar reduction in tax or increase in your tax refund, however you want to view that. And this one in particular, you get a tax credit for doing what you should be doing anyway, saving up for retirement. Now, why in this year that you retire might you be eligible? Because you can only get it if you're funding retirement accounts, 401k, yeah, Roth IRA, yeah. But you have income below certain thresholds. And those thresholds have been going up, but it's still not a ton of money. I don't know, somewhere around 70 grand, something like that. 77, I think. I don't know. You guys could look while I'm talking. And married filing jointly. But here's the thing. Maximum retirement savers credit is on the first $2,000 of retirement contributions per spouse. So if you think you're eligible, now it's not just, well, make sure you fund that Roth, max out that Roth, maybe do a spousal Roth contribution of up to $2,000 as well to max out that contribution. Maybe that also means, okay, in the year you retire, do we automatically start pulling dollars out of the IRA? Yeah, you could. Oh, but you know what? If you spend down a little bit of the cash first, you'll keep your adjusted gross income below this threshold. You'll be able to get retirement savers credit. That's an extra few hundred dollars right in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. So this is why you want to be working with your planner, Mike, because the upper limit for a married filing jointly is $76,500. Now, you don't have to remember that number. Just know that there's some goodness out there. And if you're on the bubble, this is where you might want to say, hey, I was doing Roth contributions to my 401k. I'm gonna flip that over and do some pre-tax into my 401k, get my income down a little bit underneath that threshold, and there I get the goodness. Now, it's goodness if you're married, it's goodness for you and your spouse. So I would make sure that you're both sufficiently funding a retirement plan to get that goodness.
And it doesn't mean you each need to max out, at least do $2,000 each of you. But you've got to be working with your CFP, being proactive about that. What are some other tax strategies to consider around retirement? We've got that and more coming up on The Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group.
This is Wise Money with Corhorn Financial Group.
When you retire, it's likely the biggest financial decision you're going to make. It's just even more important at that time to be looking at all six areas of your financial life, specifically tax planning. What strategies do you need to consider? We're helping with that right now. This is the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group. Thanks for being here. My name is Mike Bernard. With me in the KFG studios, Kevin Corhorn and Josh Gregory. Every episode of the Wise Money Show is on podcast wherever you listen. Search the Wise Money Show, follow us there, subscribe to it there, and rate the program there as well. We appreciate that. Okay, so tax planning is being proactive about your tax situation. Tax preparation is being reactive. There's no other way around it. It sounds cruel to say it. No, that's what you do. You take information about last year that already happened, and you get it on a compliant return to show it to the IRS. That's it. It's all reactive. Tax planning is where the value comes in. That's proactive. Well, if I do this, what's the tax impact? Oh, but if I do this, what's the tax impact? And when you do that and are looking forward, whether that's a year in advance or multiple years in advance or a generation or two in advance, wow, there is significant tax savings. And that means you're able to build more wealth tax efficiently and so on. So at the time you retire, either the year of or right before or right after, what are the big tax planning strategies?
Well, we were talking in the last segment about how, especially in a year where you're retiring partway through the year, so your income, by definition, it's not a full year's salary that you're drawing. Your income is lower that year. And any time that you're going through life and you find low income years, that's often a place where these strategies, they camp out, or they're just waiting for you there.
Yeah.
They're an opportunity that you need to be watching for. And an example of this would be in a lower income year, maybe it's a good time for you to be converting some of your IRA dollars to a Roth IRA. You know, in a low income year, if there are places within your portfolio, within your nest egg, where there's an IOU to the government attached to those, you can kind of neutralize or satisfy those IOUs at a lower tax rate potentially if you're in a lower income or partial income type of a year. And so anytime that you can move money that's never been taxed from your IRA to a Roth IRA and pay as little tax as possible, that's a strategy that you wouldn't want to have slip by because you weren't being proactive with your tax planning.
Love the idea of considering this. I feel like the year you retire, right before you retire, right after you retire, you've got to be considering this Roth conversion. Around those years, you have to, because you still have a couple decades left with those dollars. And this is an early opportunity for you to say, should I shift some of these dollars on the other side of the fence so that they can grow tax-free, no RMD, that sort of thing. And so the year you retire, the year right after, maybe right before, depends on your situation. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be considering the Roth conversion.
Yeah, this is tax planning. I would be very careful about if I'm converting, what does that do? What if I'm drawing Social Security, what part of my Social Security does that make taxable? Or if I'm on Medicare, what does that do to my Medicare Part B premiums? Yeah. So mm-hmm. there's a big tax consideration as you're doing it. This is where you really want to be looking and saying, hey, over the next 30 years, I've got these dollars that have never been taxed. Who's going to pay taxes on them? Who's the best person to pay tax on these dollars and when? Because it is confusing. You do this thing in one area of financial life and it affects all these others.
Can we highlight maybe a couple other places where there could be this IOU to the government or a tax bill that's been brewing over time and you're looking for the ideal opportunity, or in mm-hmm. Kevin's perspective here, also looking for the right person to pay the tax on these. And the two examples that I would raise are if there are some capital gains that have been building up in your portfolio, maybe you own some stocks or some mutual funds that have been growing for the future, not really being taxed all that heavily along the way, and they've run up in value so that if you were to sell, or when you sell someday, potentially there's a profit on that or a capital gain that you would pay tax on. If you could cash in some of that and pay zero tax just because of the way that your tax return is shaking out this year compared to past years, or even this year compared to future years, you got to consider that one. And then the other would be there are times when people inherit accounts that have never been taxed. And you are required, you know, especially these days, to be pulling money out of those accounts over time. You might have a 10-year window to cash in an old IRA that a parent owned at one point, and now you're the recipient of it. Well, you don't have to take the full 10 years to cash that out. You could strategically choose to pull more out in more ideal years as well.
Yeah. So actually, both of those are reasons to consider Roth conversions as well. Like so here's a situation dealing with early years of retirement. Individual needed some liquidity, and so we had to harvest some of the investments that had grown in value. There were some capital gains. The plan was to do a Roth conversion later that year because there's going to be significant IRMA. Sorry, I was pausing there. So income-related monthly adjustment amount, an increase, a surcharge that you need to pay for your Medicare Part B and Part D. Likely that's coming for this couple, for this family out there in the future. Their IRAs and, you know, it's a few million dollars. And so as they start drawing out of that or at RMD, required minimum distribution, they're going to have to pay IRMA. So how can we do Roth conversions? Well, when we were doing the tax planning, to my surprise, and it really shouldn't have been because I was aware, but I wasn't really aware until we did the math and did the multi-year tax projection. A lot of those capital gains that we harvested at the beginning of the year were going to be taxed at 0%. And if we did a Roth conversion, that Roth conversion money, that income was going to sneak down below and fill up those lower tax brackets, and all of those capital gains were going to be taxed at 15%. So instead, we said, let's pause on the Roth conversion this year, create a little bit more liquidity for future years so we don't need to harvest as much out there in the future. Let's harvest more this year. So we've got a chunk at the 0% bracket. The rest is going to be at 15%. And then that opens the door for us to have enough liquidity to do Roth conversions for the next few years mm-hmm. and fight back that future IRMA problem.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah. But the other thing, Josh, that you mentioned is if you're looking at your situation, but then when you think multi-generational, you think, okay, well, I am helping mom and dad. They haven't really talked about their finances yet, but I'm assuming, you know, they're at a stage where they're not spending, they're in the slower years of retirement, and I might be inheriting an IRA at some point, and I've only got 10 years to draw that money out. Maybe I should be doing some Roth conversion from my dollars today mm-hmm. so that as I inherit those dollars and those are taxable, I've got my own that are now, I have more sheltered tax-free. So
yeah, great. And I think of the multi-generational tax planning opportunity there because you say, hey, mom and dad are older. They're in the slow-go years. I just am getting close to retirement. I'm in the go-go years. You might want to talk to mom and dad, especially if dad is bragging about how they don't pay any taxes, and say, hey, dad, you got that retirement plan. If you paid a little bit of taxes, as long as you got two lives, there's a pretty decent chunk of money that you can emancipate at a low rate.
That's right. You know, I feel like Kevin, I'm going to pay you a compliment here. I think you are the best in the business at helping people have a vision for multi-generational planning. Because you do. You have to consider, you know, Mike, you were describing, you could be doing some things to get ready for a future event, or two generations could be collaborating a little bit more in their financial planning. And maybe the strategy is even better if it was done by mom and dad instead of by you in anticipation of inheriting some dollars. Now, that's hard because, you know, the oldest generation alive right now, finances is a very private matter. Right. And it's hard to get mom and dad maybe talking about something that they've been silent on for your entire life. Mm-hmm. But man, it's worth it to at least persuade them that some coordination could be beneficial. Ultimately, it's Uncle Sam who loses.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
And we love it when a tax plan comes together and it reduces the amount that gets lost from a family's multi-generational wealth. It could get lost to taxes if you miss the opportunity for this kind of planning.
That's right. That's right. All right. Okay. There's other tax planning strategies, a little bit more unique, but also some kind of surrounding some key decisions that happen right at retirement as well. So we're picking that back up. More coming up on the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group.
This is Wise Money with Corhorn Financial Group.
Thanks for being here. This is the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group. My name is Mike Bernard. With me in the KFG studios, Kevin Corhorn and Josh Gregory. Every episode of the Wise Money Show, as well as a lot of other content, is on the YouTube channel. Go check it out. Well over 1,000 videos there. And so if you have faced a financial decision, a question, an issue, odds are we've created a bunch of content on it. So go to YouTube. Search The Wise Money Show. Subscribe to it there. Turn on notifications so you're made aware every time we drop a new talk show, which is what you're listening to right now, or more direct, more palatable, briefer Next Wise Step videos that air throughout the work week as well. So go to YouTube, search The Wise Money Show. Talking about tax planning strategies in the year you retire, around retirement, here's an unpopular one. The tax strategy, we've said, the year you retire, likely it's a partial year of income. Choosing to delay Social Security even just to the next year. And sometimes you've got to look at the math and set your emotions aside for just a second and see how you could optimize Social Security. And there is not a one size fits all. Any financial professional that says you should always draw immediately, they're just trying to tell you what you want to hear. Okay. There's a lot of times you should draw immediately. There's other times when you should delay a little, other times when you should consider delaying all the way until 70. It depends on your situation and all of the different factors, all six areas of your financial life. From a tax planning standpoint, though, it may make sense to say, okay, you're retiring in, let's say, June. Let's at least delay Social Security until January. Because in this particular year, from a tax standpoint, let's just not have Social Security muddy the water. That would be extra income, and you're going to have to pay tax on the Social Security because of the other income sources you have, where if we just waited, that would give us a little bit of space this year to do some other things, and then we could start Social Security the next year. One of the primary examples I'm thinking of right now, this very unique situation, folks that when they came in to do financial planning, we look at all six areas, right? We talked about that at the beginning of the show. A couple hundred thousand sitting in cash. Just very conservative individuals and wanted a lot of cash there for a variety of reasons. And so, but guess what? About 1.9 million in an IRA, or excuse me, 401k, pre-tax. So they don't need it right away. And they've had some health challenges, so their Social Security was going to just about cover all the income they need. I mean, you might be salivating at this financial scenario. I mean, think of the financial piece that you have. And yet, now managing for RMD, they've got one child. So imagine, you know, out there in the future, one person paying all the tax on this 1.9 million or whatever grows to out there in the future. So the idea was, let's delay Social Security until the next year, so we've got this year to be doing more Roth conversions and some other tax planning.
Were you doing the 6-month look back and still claiming all of that that foregone income, or did you just start it fresh and it was a little bit larger because they waited the extra 6 months?
For Social Security?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we were starting fresh, but that's a great – I mean, that's another choice.
Right. What Joshua is saying is if you waited, if you retired in June and you said, I shouldn't have Social Security, Mike says to muddy the water, I would say to multiply the – income tax that you pay.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, no, I don't. Because again, this is where you just want to analyze it and be objective. To Josh's point, if I'm at least 6 months beyond full retirement age and I wait, I can draw it January 1 of the next year with the 6 year look back.
6 month look back. Yep.
That's what
six
I said.
6 year would be great.
That'd be
really
well,
fun. Yeah, they give you 6 years. So you get the 6 month. So you get 6 months of Social Security. Now your Social Security monthly payment will be smaller.
A little bit less
for the rest of your life. And the only way, there's really no way to know for sure, because people are like, well, what's the insider's tip here? What's the best time to draw Social Security? Nobody knows. Yeah. It's only knowable in hindsight when we see how long did you live, what was your financial situation, what was your health and quality of life along the way. I mean, there's all these factors that go into it. So it's not.
But here's what we can at least tell you. It's probably not the identical answer that your neighbor came up with or your brother-in-law or someone else who's advising you. Well, just do what I did. Mm-hmm. Well, your situation is not identical to theirs. So what may or may not have been optimized for their situation isn't going to perfectly align with the best strategy for you. And that's why Social Security, the decision on when to draw it has to be an individual one. It has to be part of your financial plan. And just know what we're talking about today is that it has tax consequences. You could choose a little bit later, a little bit earlier, and have an impact on the tax picture for you in that year, maybe for your whole life.
And I don't want you to miss what Josh said earlier. I mean, in that scenario where you say, I don't want the Social Security income in this tax year, but I really had my heart set on drawing Social Security right away. Well, you could delay it until January and then do the 6 month like retroactive filing, and you can get all of that 6 months in January, you know, and a lump sum, and that lands in January's tax year. Even though it's Social Security for the prior year, it lands in the tax year. You're a cash basis taxpayer, so you don't pay tax on it if you don't have it. And so very interesting strategy. But that's planning around Social Security. You can't talk about that without also talking about a tax planning strategy that applies to more and more people right now, and that is funding an HSA. Specifically, we get this question all the time. Can I fund my HSA in retirement? Well, probably not, because if your retirement means you're on Medicare, you're 65 or older and you're on Medicare, there currently are not any supplement plans or anything like that qualify you for contributing to an HSA. Even if you say, oh, that's a big deductible, still, it's not HSA eligible. You have to have only one type of health insurance, and it's got to be an HSA eligible high deductible health plan. And so funding that HSA in the later stages of your career and even that last year that you work is critically important. Now, if you retire at 62, and before you get on Medicare, you go to the marketplace and you get an HSA eligible plan, then keep funding that HSA. You don't need earned income to fund it. What you do need is an HSA eligible high deductible health plan and no other health insurance. Mm-hmm.
But just know, if in your scenario, Mike, as soon as you get to 65, if you've applied for Social Security, you basically also applied for Medicare Part A. Mm-hmm. And that has a 6 month look back. So this is where I've seen a number of people get tripped up with this.
Finish that statement though. You said there's a 6 month look back on whether or not you're eligible to contribute to the HSA.
Correct.
Right. So you've been contributing all along, and then you go to sign up for Social Security. You get Medicare Part A, and you realize, oh, doggone it, the past 6 months that I was contributing to the HSA, I actually am not eligible anymore retroactively.
Right.
So you really do have to pay attention that for many people, the year that they retire, it's almost a partial year for them to be able to contribute to an HSA. And the exact details on how many months worth of contributions or what portion of the maximum contribution can I make it has to be calculated for you based on when you're retiring.
Yeah, we actually did a whole show focusing on that, like the different scenarios of when you retire and partial year and at what age and what health insurance are you transitioning onto, and sort of broke down all those rules. So check out that show as well. Guys, let's put a wrapper on it. You know, we started the show talking about how there's six areas to your financial life. Tax planning is one of them. Retirement planning is one of them. So is your cash flow. So is your, well, we're talking about health insurance. So is your protection plan. Mm-hmm. So is your estate planning, right? Mm-hmm. So are your investments. You have to look at all of those to determine which of these ideas, what are the ideas? And then which of them make the most sense for you to consider?
That's right. Financial planning is about navigating the pivots in your financial life. And there's no bigger pivot than when you transition into retirement. The types of decisions that you're going to be making, I would say the opportunities, and let's go negative and say the types of threats, the dangers or the risks of making the wrong decisions at this monumental, game-changing transition in your life, man, it's huge. And that's why you should have a coach. That's why you should have a plan. You should have both in hand as you march into retirement. And if you've never gotten started in your financial planning formally with help, now is the time as you get closer to retirement.
Right. This is not just a show, this particular topic, not just for those right on the cusp of retirement. This is in your 30s or 40s. Planning now is going to determine what options you have out there in the future. So, all right. That's all the time we have for today. On behalf of Josh Gregory, Kevin Corhorn, all of us at KFG, have a great weekend. We'll see you next Saturday for the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group. Can we just pause for a second? And I don't want to sound like I did in the last show. I'm a new person. But how funny it is that we say we're going to talk about the top tax strategies and Kevin immediately thinks to all the stuff you shouldn't do.
I know. What it
wants to start with. All right. No, before we tell you what to do, we're going to tell you what not to do.
Securities offered through Silver Oak Securities, member FINRA/SIPC. Advisory services offered through KFG Wealth Management, LLC. Doing business as Corhorn Financial Group. KFG Wealth Management, LLC and Silver Oak Securities Incorporated companies are unaffiliated.